Feel the vibration.
Broadcasting worldwide in complete defiance of the U.S. Patriot Act and the NDAA.
This is the Truth Frequency Radio Network.
Greetings and welcome to Real Politics. This is James Tracy. Just this past week, on Friday, something took place that was really quite alarming in the city of Paris, France. Most people, almost everyone, is likely aware of terror attacks having taken place across the city. And we were informed of this via the major media, the corporate media, cable news channels. Although, almost immediately, if one were to just keep partial attention, there were a lot of conflicting reports. How many shooters were there? How many deaths were there? How many of those were injured? How many were being taken to hospital? All of these things, all of this conflicting information really causes one to ask further questions if they are at least modestly vigilant. And perhaps have a healthy suspicion of what's going on among the political leadership of their country, country of France, the NATO member countries, because they've been caught lying in the past. It's just as simple as that. You take 9/11 or the London 7/7 bombings, or the more recent Charlie Hebdo so-called attacks back in January of 2015. All of these events are cause for concern, and they've been proven to be in many ways false. We're given another impression of what's taken place via the major media. Our guest on this episode is Brandon Turbeville. He is an author out of Florence, South Carolina. He has a bachelor's degree from Francis Marion University. He's the author of 6 books, including Codex Alimentarius, The End of Health Freedom, 7 Real Conspiracies, 5 Sense Solutions and Dispatches from a Dissident, Volumes 1 and 2, The Road to Damascus, The Anglo-American Assault on Syria, and The Difference It Makes, 36 Reasons Why Hillary Clinton Should Never Be President. Turbeville has published over 500 articles dealing on a wide variety of subjects, including health, economics, government corruption, and civil liberties. Turbeville's podcast, Truth on the Tracks, can be found every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on UCY-TV. More information is available at BrandonTurbeville.com. That's TurbeVille.com. Of course, many listeners will likely be aware of his work that can be found over at Global Research and ActivistPost.com and elsewhere across the alternative media spectrum. Greetings, Brandon.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the program and to come on in such short notice as well, given the fact that this event has taken place less than 48 hours ago as we record. And you were very quick to have an article up online on the same day of the event, on November 13th of 2015, called 9 Reasons to Question the Paris Terror Attacks. Why don't we go over that article, if possible, the 9 reasons. And one of the things I think that you're doing here that I welcome is that you're asking readers to look at the news media more critically, in order to sort of analyze, to assess these events that may in fact be contrived, be false flags.
Yeah, I think that's extremely important for them to do. Whenever you look at these types of incidents, I try to point out to people that whenever you see an attack such as what we saw in Paris, whether it's Charlie Hebdo, Sandy Hook, something like that, where it's a high-profile event, the first thing you need to do is look at the early reports. Look at how many perpetrators, how many victims, were the perpetrators killed, were they arrested, did they get away? What happened, compare and contrast those reports, the early ones, with the later reports that happened 3 days later, 4 days later, et cetera. And what you'll find is that there's a lot of differences. And I think that for most people, that seems somewhat reasonable because you have this, this frantic attempt to try to figure out what's going on as it's happening or shortly thereafter, witness accounts, et cetera. And I think a lot of people would say, well, it's just the fog of war, essentially, right? They get details wrong, they get them right. But that's not necessarily the way it happens in mainstream media, because what you have in mainstream media is a situation where early reports are actually more accurate because they're not subject to this sterilization attempt that comes from top-down management of the mainstream. In other words, CEOs that are directly connected to the CIA, reporters that are connected to the CIA, that's all on clear record, that narratives get whitewashed, they get changed. You have something that starts out as, you know, three shooters or five shooters, and then all of a sudden, despite video evidence and numerous eyewitness reports, the story becomes two shooters, and then a day later it's just one shooter. It's a lone gunman, and anybody who questions the lone gunman theory is a crazy conspiracy theorist. So that's why people should pay attention to these early reports, because you're likely to get more witness testimony that shows something that is important to the story but will be ignored from there on out, because even the witnesses will be called conspiracy theorists or inaccurate if it contradicts the official narrative. And of course, these narratives are always used for propaganda purposes, to provide justification for certain agendas and that sort of thing. So I think one of the more obvious questions that we should have here is, how many gunmen actually took place or actually took part in the Paris attack? So we know that we've got, seven different attacks taking place at or around the same time. We have others, for instance, the Bataclan theater, where there were several shooters, there were over 100 people killed and hostages taken and that sort of thing. There were reports early on that suggested there were four shooters. Other reports suggested there were three shooters, and it seems that the majority of mainstream media reports now seem to be acknowledging only two shooters. So the question would be, how many shooters there? Was there two? Were there three? Were there four? Were there six? How do we not know how many shooters there were? There have an eyewitness, guy by the name of Pierre-Marie Bertin. He was at the theater when the shooting began, and he said that there were four gunmen. He actually provided some detailed eyewitness testimony when he talked about some of the male hostages who actually went up to the balcony and tried to beg for the life of their wives with some of the killers. And he said that there were four shooters. So we're hearing about two. We've also got Australian media reports suggesting there were three gunmen. And we also have the mainstream reports, though, saying that there's only two. Mm-hmm. We can also ask the question, were the gunmen killed or arrested? We have, the question of the number of gunmen, that's one question, but we have reports coming from a number of different mainstream media organizations early on that the police had killed the gunmen. Fox News and Sky News reported that they had arrested a gunman, and that they actually said, "I am from ISIS." we'll get into that in a minute. But so they have arrested a gunman, but we were told early on that they had killed the gunman. So does that mean that the three gunmen, they arrested one and killed two, or does that mean that there were only two gunmen and that Fox is not telling the truth? Or does that mean that Fox is telling the truth and the other mainstream media outlets are not telling the truth? So these are just a couple of the questions we could ask in regards to this.
Exactly. And as I was watching the coverage on Friday evening, Friday night, it appeared as if there were really very few, if any, eyewitnesses that were actually being interviewed at the time. And it would seem, under normal circumstances and based upon coverage of previous tragic events, shootings, bombings, and so forth, that eyewitnesses are the first types of people that one actually goes to in order to find out what has taken place at ground zero, so to speak. And those interviews were very few and far between, and frequently the interviews that did take place, as far as I could see, even going into last evening and this morning, Sunday, were interviews with journalists from other media rather than, for example, French citizenry, Parisians themselves.
Right. I think most of the interviews that you'll see are coming from AP reporters who happen to be in the theater or individuals who happen to be in the stadium at the time of the attack. I think also when we talk about, I wanted to mention this too, the types of weapons used in the attack were even called into question, because we had reports suggesting that the attackers were using AK-47s. That was something that was really broadcast throughout the media, that they were using AK-47s, but other reports suggested that they were using shotguns. You can attribute that maybe to eyewitnesses, particularly in France, where it's been pretty much disarmed, that they don't know the difference between the different types of weapons. But shotguns and AK-47s are pretty different in the way that they're used and the way that they work and sound and interact. So there's a question as to that. If the police have killed the gunman, if the situation is over now, why don't we know officially what kind of weapon was used? We should be able to find out if there's a shotgun lying about or if there's a AK-47 lying on the floor somewhere. We should know clearly what type of weapons have been used. I would also talk about the gunman being connected to ISIS and being connected to Syria. We saw these reports. It was very convenient, almost, right? This guy was allegedly arrested, and again, my point: was he arrested, or what is this? But he says there were reports of screams of shooters screaming Allahu Akbar, and then another shooter screaming, this is for Syria. That pretty much gives you the narrative, doesn't it? I mean, that gives you the narrative that these guys are ISIS, that they're upset because I guess the French are allegedly bombing ISIS, which they're not, but the narrative says that they are. So the ISIS fighters are mad about the situation in Syria, so they're taking it out on France, and also because they hate these alleged freedoms that exist in France that somebody has apparently seen at some point. So all of this is very questionable, including the timing of the event. Besides the event occurring on Friday the 13th, we had this climate change conference.
Right.
There was a conference on climate change scheduled for a couple of weeks. I think it's supposed to start on November 30th.
Mm-hmm.
And in anticipation of the climate change conference, France was anticipating massive protests. That they said they were fearing that they could become potentially violent. They were worried about potential terrorist attacks occurring, and public disorder and all that kind of stuff. Well, now there's not going to be protests. I can guarantee you that. There's not going to be massive protests of individuals in the streets in Paris now when this conference comes, because France is, the last time I looked, at least in the streets of Paris, resembled the 1943 version of itself more than it did anything else. And, it's interesting that it comes so close to an event where a protest with such a thing that they did not want to see happen, because most of these types of conferences end with anti-globalization protests, anti-energy austerity protests, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and if I may intercede, there's also the G20 summit that's taking place in Turkey beginning Sunday, the 15th of November.
Right, and now we're all focused on this. So, You know, this is the, and I would imagine that the security apparatus around the G20 is extremely tight now, and that just about anything can be conducted now and justified under national security and public security as a result of this. In fact, the security question is interesting enough because. Because of the UN climate change conference that was coming, the security had been heightened, not just because of the conference, but because of the Charlie Hebdo attack that occurred earlier this year.
Uh-huh.
Heightened security so much for prevent these protests and public disorder. So you got to ask, how did this happen? I remember after Charlie Hebdo, they got all these new powers for surveillance, arrest powers, and that sort of thing. It was like the Patriot Act version 9.10 or something. France, you know, it's they keep doing this every few months, but they got all these new surveillance powers, new arrest powers. So how on earth did this happen? This is heightened security time, but nevertheless, the largest terror attack in France since I can't remember one that's. It's larger that comes to mind. This is certainly one of the bigger terror attacks since 9/11. But so France is a total police state. So why how would this be able to happen under the eyes of the security apparatus?
Well, at the time of September 11th of 2001, the United States alone was spending over $30 billion per year on intelligence and security related functions.
Right, and we're now given the line that these, you know, I refer to them as pre-civilized savages have outsmarted first world high-end military surveillance states. Again, right? I mean, I think is this the key to unseating Western society that you just have to have a Wahhabist ideology and you know a couple of walkie-talkies and you can defeat the world security apparatus? This doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Well, there is also the instance of the authorities allegedly recovering a passport of one of the would-be attackers at the scene just recently.
Right. That reminds us of 9/11, doesn't it? Remember, the jet fuel can melt steel, but not paper passports.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, this guy is apparently... This is what's interesting, right? This is... There's a suicide bomber. He goes outside of the stadium where Germany and France are playing a soccer game. And conveniently, President Hollande is attending this this game.
Yeah.
Where there's a suicide bomb. Reports are that there were two bombs that were detonated. And there's big enough an explosion that you could hear it inside the stadium over the cheers of the crowd, so much that it disturbed the players enough that they kind of stopped playing and were looking around to see what that was. Now, if that explosion is that big, how do we have a recovered body from the suicide bomber? I've studied Syria, right? I follow the Syrian situation a great deal, and it's... I mean, I don't want to say it's impossible, but I have never seen a suicide bomber have a body to be identified unless he failed, unless it failed to detonate or only detonated halfway. This was apparently such a loud explosion. It detonated very well because it was heard over the cheers of the crowd. Why does this guy have a body to be identified beyond, you know, DNA analysis?
Uh-huh.
And B, how does a paper passport survive that? Again, this is the magic passport. Apparently, passports get a magical quality when they are possessed by terrorists. So
yeah,
they can survive any kind of devastation, fire, jet fuel, suicide bombings, you name it. They can survive even though they're paper.
Well, and your observations speak to a larger set of concerns about the whole presentation of the event itself. This was something that was pumped up to be larger than life on the cable news channels between Shepard Smith at Fox News, Anderson Cooper at CNN, Brian Williams on MSNBC, all arguing that this was something that was tantamount to the terror experienced by France during World War II. And yet, in this age of social media, there are few images or videos of what actually transpired or the immediate aftermath, which also struck me as rather unusual.
Yeah, especially considering the surveillance state, right? We have cameras everywhere here in France, so why are there not more footage? Why is there not more footage available? There is. I saw one video, I think, only one video so far. Maybe you've seen more, but it's the shootout at one of the restaurants, and you really can't see much. All you can see is the police just kind of standing around, and there's a few shots that are fired. You know what? One of the other things I want to point out, this is extremely important, though, is that one of the marks of these type of false flag attacks is that the individuals, the perpetrators, are known to security agents, intelligence agencies, before the events took place. We saw this, go back to 9/11, you can go back to one of the myriad of alleged terrorist attacks that have been stopped here in the United States, you know, the ones that the FBI creates, and then they bust, and then they go out and ask for praise for busting the terrorist attack that they created.
Right.
Yes. We had the same. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, as has been well documented in Trevor Aronson's book, The Terror Factory.
Yeah, and all of this, I mean, the Charlie Hebdo was another example, right, where mm-hmm. these guys were known, they were on the terrorist watch list, some of them had actually been arrested for terrorism, and then they were inexplicably let go with the charges dropped. Well, we have one of these individuals here, one of the guys who was involved in the attacks, was a Parisian, right? He was from Paris, and he was known to the security agencies for quite some time. In fact, he had been on the terrorist watch list for 5 years, but now they're claiming he wasn't being monitored closely enough to be stopped before he took part in the attack. So we're supposed to believe that he's on a terrorist watch list in a police state, and he's not being monitored closely enough to be stopped before he's taken part in the attack. Maybe France was too busy reading the emails of its own citizens to actually get to this. Are we supposed to believe that? I mean, he was known to the security services before he committed the attack, like all the other attackers in the previous acts of terrorism in France. So that's another hallmark of the false flag, that this guy was known to intelligence agencies, had connections to the intelligence agencies in some way or another. That's another big red flag to me.
You also point out in your recent article, 9 Reasons to Question the Paris Terror Attacks, are drills that a hallmark of false flag operations are running drills that are taking place in the vicinity and in the time context, if you will, of a alleged terror attack.
Yeah, generally the drills that are the hallmark of the terrorist attack, if they are occurring at or around, you know, shortly before, shortly after the actual terrorist attack, that's generally a hallmark of some type of false flag attack, right? Because you remember on 9/11 we had 46 drills that were related to the events that took place there, some way or the other, that had taken place either shortly before or during the actual events. 7/7 we actually had drills of exactly the same scenario, exactly the same time, and exactly the same locations. Essentially, what they do is, you know, it creates intentional confusion if the drill is taking place during the actual attack for legitimate security personnel or emergency personnel, but it also provides a cover for the events to go when it actually comes time to launch the events. It gives the individuals who are involved in the planning of the terrorist attack, it gives them this element of cover. You have this, you know, compartmentalization in the military and security world, so you could be planning an actual terrorist attack, and if anyone questions you, you can always say, well, we're planning a drill, and, you know, everybody goes back to their cubicle. It's a need-to-know basis in terms of the knowledge of those things, and that gives you plausible deniability when the attack happens, because you can say, oh, we were running drills, we were confused, and the actual preparation of that attack, which was made during the drills, is covered up under the nature of the drill itself, right? Because you were planning for the drill, and it's just all explained as a coincidence, which apparently still by. But in this situation, we had a drill that was being run by the United Kingdom, which was after the Charlie Hebdo attacks, so earlier this year, but still relevant, I suppose, because the drill involved a sequence of events in Paris that were similar to the Charlie Hebdo attacks. And again, somebody could argue, well, you know, that's they're just trying to play catch up after the Charlie Hebdo attacks. But I just got reports of another drill that may have been taking place, and I'm not exactly sure how valid this is. I'm trying to figure it out at this point because I don't speak French, so I need to do some more research before I come out and say that this is real or valid. But there's apparently reports that there was indeed a drill being planned for the morning of the November 13th, which was a multi-site exercise, and that involved a number of military emergency personnel.
In Paris?
In Paris, yeah. There are reports. There's really just a YouTube video from an interview that was done on France Info. There's a gentleman, Patrick Pelou, that's an EMT, and I think he may have be connected with Charlie Hebdo magazine or something. I'm not entirely sure how valid this is, and we need to do more research before we claim that this is...
Brandon Turbeville, hold that thought, please. We're coming up on a break. This is James Tracy on Real Politic. We're speaking with Brandon Turbeville, researcher and author over at Activist Post, also BrandonTurbeville.com. We'll have more with Brandon, analysis and breakdown of the 11/13 Paris terror attacks after this.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like Strange World with Mark Sargent, Jaronism Raw with Jaron and Mizza, Truth Frequency with Chris and Sherry Geo, The Kev Baker Show, X-Squared with Brooks Agnew, Freaky Friday with The Woo Crew, Perceptions Talk Radio with Jonathan, The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph, Phoenix Rising Radio, and dozens more. Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308. Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH. Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media. 24 hours a day. Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.
Greetings, Earth Explorers. My name is Brooks Agnew, and I am your host on X Squared Radio every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. This is where the past meets the future. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. We will dissolve the propaganda of dangerous people with dangerous plans for the planet. We will discuss the latest technologies and challenges for humankind. We will discover the safest place for you to stand when the thinkings and doings of mankind come flying apart, and how you can be one of the people that helps put it back together. Join us.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. it is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Greetings and welcome back to Real Politics. This is James Tracy. Our guest on this hour is Brandon Turbeville. We're breaking down, analyzing, discussing the 11-13-15 Paris terror events, Paris terror attacks, from various different angles. When we left off at the bottom of the hour, we were discussing specifically how there were drills that were taking place at that time on 11-13, being participated in by various agencies. And this is a common scenario, isn't it? It's something we saw on 9-11. It's something we saw with the London 7-7 bombings. It's something that we saw with the Sandy Hook Massacre, with the Boston Marathon bombing, with so many of these school shootings and these shootings taking place in public areas in the United States. We find out frequently that a drill had been taking place around the particular event at the location. And as Brandon was pointing out, this provides the agencies, those involved in perpetrating the terror event, with plausible deniability. They can either allow the drill to go live, or they can allow for it to proceed as a drill. Brandon, I want to also this half hour talk about and get into Syria, because you've done a good deal of research on the Middle East, and specifically Libya, Syria, and the U.S., the Anglo-American Empire's misdeeds in this region, and how this contributes to what has taken place in Paris. It's being pointed to as a reason for these events having taken place, right? We have the gunman saying that this was, you know, I am with ISIS, this is for Syria, allegedly. And yet at the same time, as Ken O'Keefe pointed out on Saturday over at Press TV, the former U.S. Marine, he states that we fail to recognize that we are ISIS, meaning the United States, the NATO empire, or rather the NATO countries themselves.
I think that is the key to this the situation, because as I have mentioned in my articles and will be mentioning on my show tonight, the claims that it's ISIS, well, okay, fine, ISIS may have been involved here, but who actually controls ISIS? The creation of ISIS as some type of shadowy terrorist organization that, you know, survives on oil revenue and receives donations from Twitter, because, again, I want to point out that if you're an activist and you're opposing globalization in, well, the Western world, and you go out to protest, then your Twitter account can be shut down, or your Facebook account can be shut down if it threatens the alleged security of the people participating in the G20 conference or something to that effect. But if you're ISIS, supposedly we can't figure out how to shut down the Twitter accounts of ISIS, so they can reach these things on social media. That's one interesting point. But the idea that it's some shadowy terrorist organization that's self-sufficient just appeared out of nowhere in Syria and Iraq on these massive convoys. Nobody knew what was happening. Nobody knew how they got the trucks. Nobody knew how they got the weapons. And all of a sudden, they just appeared, and they're 10 feet tall, and they're Superman. They're bulletproof. All that falls apart, right? Particularly when the Russians actually bomb ISIS, and they die just like normal human beings. So all that falls apart, and I think what people should realize is that when you talk about this and when you talk about what ISIS does, you're talking about what they're directed to do by the CIA, by the MI6, and the lesser extent, but extent nonetheless, to the DGSE. And, of course, the Gulf Cooperation Council, the GCC, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey, of course. They're essentially the NATO intelligence, as well as the GCC. are heavily involved in this, as well as the Israelis. But the ISIS fighters, as an attempt to present ISIS as a separate terrorist organization, right? We have ISIS, we have Al-Qaeda, we have Al-Nusra, Free Syrian Army, Yarmouk Brigades, you know, all these names, right? Army of Conquest, Jaish al-Fath, all this stuff. And they're all different organizations, and some are really bad terrorists, and some are moderate rebels and, you know, freedom and democracy people and all that kind of stuff. And that's all false, right? You can paint these guys with a broad brush, absolutely, because there's no such thing as a moderate rebel in Syria. There never was.
Yeah.
I've documented that in my book. There's just no such thing as these guys. They're all jihadists. They all want to behead and rape their way across the country and establish some silly caliphate. The groups, you can look at them as different brigades. Little groups have different names. At the bottom levels of these groups, the actual cannon fodder, they do fight one another because they're fanatics, and fanatics always fight one another. But at the higher levels, they're taking orders directly from the CIA, from the GCC, and from Turkish intelligence, etc. ISIS, just as a name, just for people to know, is Al-Qaeda, right? Al-Qaeda, the umbrella organization, of course, founded by Zbigniew Brzezinski in the late 1970s, is entirely a Western creation, of an American creation. It's been used ever since. But we have Al-Qaeda, and then in Iraq, we have Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and in Syria, we had the Al-Nusra Front. And the two, at some point, began collaborating more officially, the United Front, not separated by borders kind of thing, and they called themselves the Islamic Emirate of Iraq and the Levant, IEIL. That name then began to change the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, ISIL, and then it became the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS, right? This is entirely the same organization. So when we talk about, well, maybe we could use al-Nusra against ISIS, or maybe we could use the Free Syrian Army and support them. It's all the stuff that anybody who tells you that there's any difference is lying to you, right? They may have different brigades for propaganda purposes, but they all work together. They all have the same goals, and they all are directed and controlled by the United States and by Britain and France, by NATO and the GCC. So. Yeah. If you're saying that ISIS is responsible for these terrorist attacks, well, the responsibility, the fingers should be pointing not at the Middle East, not Syria, it should be pointing at Washington, D.C., at Paris, and London. That's where the fingers should be pointing.
Now, Brandon Turbeville, you mentioned a moment ago the book that you had written specifically on Syria, and we had a little problem with Skype. Is this The Road to Damascus?
Right, The Road to Damascus, the Anglo-American Assault Syria. It's available on my website, brandonturbeville.com. And a lot of the articles that were published in there and came there are also available on the site. You can search them on Google as well. It's available for purchase on hard copy and should be on Amazon pretty soon, too.
Okay, great. And is it also available as an electronic book?
It will be very soon. We're in the process of getting that up.
Now, I think that we also need to emphasize when we're talking about these various groups in Syria operating in Libya is not only are they sponsored by the West, by Saudi Arabia, Israel, Britain, the United States, their intelligence apparatus, but these are extremely brutal mercenaries who are committing atrocities in these countries. They take a page or two from Death Squad John Negroponte and his student, the U.S. ambassador to Syria, Robert Ford.
That's right. In fact, Robert Ford was actually instrumental in helping set up these death squads. He was actually kicked out of Syria, kicked out of Damascus, because he was going around acting as a cheerleader for the death squads. In Syria early on, and he was given orders not to leave Damascus, which he did. He snuck across, snuck out of the city and would meet with jihadists there as a cheerleader, and eventually got kicked out of Syria for doing that. And it's really a history that he actually goes back further than what happened in South America, but it's very similar. to that, although I think on a much wider scale now. So, yeah, I would encourage people to not look at this all as just kind of a non-existent entity. The ISIS terrorists, they do exist. They are running around across Syria, not the rampant they were now that the Russians are bombing, but it's entirely directed by Western intelligence. And notice that after these attacks, it should be transparent to anybody who's even somewhat informed here. After these attacks, we call for more war in Syria, right? Remember, when France was hesitant to bomb Syria at all, we had a French journalist killed by ISIS. And then when they were hesitant to commit more military treasure to Syria, we got Charlie Hebdo. It's not the only reasons, of course, but those are reasons nonetheless. And now we're getting calls for more war and hearing ridiculous statements like, well, ISIS is now active in Europe and it's trying to attack the United States. So the person who bears responsibility for that is Bashar al-Assad. There's even ridiculous, I mean, these absolutely stupid claims that Assad supports ISIS.
Yeah.
This is beyond belief. But now the idea is that in order to stop ISIS, you have to bomb Assad's military infrastructure. You have to continue bombing Syrian civilian infrastructure. And, of course, the gullible public is going to stop up. They don't understand the nuance. They don't understand that Assad is actually the main enemy of ISIS. And I think a lot of people are confused by the whole geopolitical situation. But it's being used to justify a greater involvement in Syria, particularly because the terrorists are losing now, which shows you what happens when an Air Force actually bombs ISIS targets.
And along those lines, there's been a propaganda war that's been waged against the Assad regime, no doubt. You have these entities such as the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which is essentially one individual operating out of his apartment in London, I believe. And yet this individual, the so-called organization, issues press releases, and they are taken and run with by the likes of Reuters and Associated Press and other major media.
Yeah, that's Rami Abdulrahman, right? He's one guy in London who apparently is the expert on all things Syria, despite the fact that he's... he's supposed to be the insider of all insiders, but he's just sitting in his apartment on the internet. And as you said, everything that he says is taken as gold. You also have a number of these different propaganda outlets, but also the Activists Say school of journalism. You know, this is when they go to Syria, and a reporter will say, "Activists say that." Assad has used chemical weapons in Ghouta. Right? Well, activists say mean death squad terrorists. The activists that are talking about are these allegedly pro-democracy, pro-freedom, anti-government fighters that, despite having been into this for the last, 4 years, nobody's ever been able to locate. They say, activists say Assad has used chemical weapons. And, of course, all evidence to the contrary. They still go along with that line, and it's repeated all across the mainstream press. And you get things like Syria Danny, Gay Girl in Damascus, and stuff like that, which Gay Girl in Damascus just didn't exist. It was a straight guy, and I think he was in London, maybe he was in the United States, had connections to big NGO, and Gay Girl in Damascus never existed. It was just a big propaganda attempt that got exposed. And Syria Danny, where he was caught actually coordinating gunfire, so he would appear as if he was under fire from government troops in Syria, that was broadcast all over CNN. That was another example as well. Rahman is just the more effective, more professional version of it.
And Brandon, if 6 or 12 months ago, would you have actually believed that Russia would go into Syria and wage an air campaign against ISIS that has been so effective?
Well, you know, you could kind of see this coming because the geopolitical goal here on the part of the Anglo-American NATO bloc is to encircle Russia. And at some point, Russia was, you know, I would consider this an act of self-defense, despite the fact that there's bombing going on in a sovereign nation. They were invited in. It's an act of self-defense because the idea is to bring down, from the perspective of the NATO bloc, to bring down the last Syrian, Russian outpost in the Middle East, which is Syria, to then move on to Iran and Hezbollah Lebanon, and then you can encircle Russia even deeper. You're right on the borders. You've got you could still enable your proxies in Chechnya. The NATO bloc is now in Ukraine, right up on the borders of Russia. So I think Russia had recognized some time ago that if they didn't do something, to use a Western propaganda ploy, if they don't fight the terrorists over there, they're going to have to fight them over here. And I think that, you know, it was a matter, only a matter of time before Russia had to do something. Because if they stay out of it like they did in Libya, then they're only going to see a march forward. Iran will be on the chopping block, and then it's maybe a few more destabilizations in Azerbaijan or some border state on the other side of Russia. But we can even see now where the Turks have collaborated in Ukraine to create a Muslim brigade to basically engage in terrorism inside Russia from the Ukrainian border, and use ISIS terrorists to fill the ranks of the Muslim brigade. You can see that Russia is already recognizing the fact that terrorism is being pushed up from Syria into the Russian border. So I think that this is clearly a self-defensive move, and they know that if they don't do something now, then eventually Russia may go the way of Syria if they don't try to stand up and stop it.
And within the past 7 to 10 days before 11/13, the Paris terror events, the French military had placed their only aircraft carrier in the Eastern Mediterranean.
Yeah, they did, and that I believe the aircraft carrier was slated to go towards in that direction before the Charlie Hebdo attack. Shortly before, like 3 days before the Charlie Hebdo attack. After a Charlie Hebdo attack, it was sent on its mission, and now or it's given its marching orders, and now it's arrived. Also, what you had was a major victory by the Assad government over the Qaeris Air Force Base in Aleppo. Right? It's been under siege for 2 years. You see Assad making gains every day. They're liberating new towns from the death squads and terrorists. Sure. And the Qaeris Air Force Base now is, once they have fully secured that, it looks like they've done that, have a place where Russian planes, Syrian planes, etc., can fly missions even deeper into Syrian territory more effectively, particularly in places like Raqqa, which is considered the headquarters of the Islamic State. You see a gradual reclamation of territory that's taking place in Syria by the Assad government. They're about to close that gap. There's this gap between Azaz and Jarablus in the northern part of Syria. It's a 60-mile gap of territory there. The Kurds have taken control of the from Jarablus to the east, to the eastern tip of Syria, and then also they've taken control from Azaz to the west. But there's that 60-mile gap between Azaz and Jarablus, and that is what's left of the rat line, right, of Turkish support, where they're funneling in ISIS terrorists, equipment, military support, and so forth. That's where the jihadists are coming in. It's bottlenecks right there, that 60-mile corridor. And conveniently, that's where this safe zone that Turkey and the United States are trying to establish exists. It's 60 miles from Jarablus to Assad. So that should tell everybody what they're trying to do. They're trying to create a no-fly zone so that Russia and Syria can't bomb ISIS as it's coming in from Turkey. But I think both the Russians and the Syrians recognize that closing that border is the key to really withering away terrorism in Syria. So there's been an increased effort to support the Kurds in that area to close that border. The Syrians and the Russians are moving north and trying to do that as well. So I think it's kind of a panic for the Anglo-Americans. So I think they're really throwing whatever they can throw at the Western public to gin up enough support to really go in and try to combat the Syrian government in some way. Maybe not directly the Russians, although I'm not saying that's out of the realm of possibility. It does appear that some people in places of power are more than willing to start a shooting match with Russia, which is a very bad idea for everybody. But it appears that there is a renewed effort to go in and bomb Syrian military infrastructure, Syrian bases, that sort of thing. So we'll have to see how the Russians respond and how the Syrians respond.
Well, U.S. and allied forces are apparently also airlifting ISIS out of Syria and into Yemen and Libya.
Yeah, they're doing that. They're also airlifting supplies into ISIS fighters in Iraq. Saudi Arabia, of course, is now mired down in Yemen. They went after these Houthi rebels, which are not even massive in number. And Qatar recently sent in a lot of troops and military hardware to Yemen as well, and just got eaten up by the Houthis. So Saudi Arabia has threatened and said it considered military action in Syria, and that remains. But Saudi Arabia is a paper tiger. They're just like the ISIS clients that they have, right? They're sort of a non-military. The only benefit they have is that the United States will come and rescue them at any opportunity as long as they are beneficial to the U.S. So. The U.S. is definitely using these terrorists. They're being shipped in to back into Libya, I guess, for some of them, and into Yemen. But also, as I said, they're trying to push them into Russia. Remember, the United States had threatened, had warned that there might be terrorist attacks in Russia sooner rather than later because Russia is bombing ISIS. And within 3 days, Russia stopped the terrorist attack over. I think a subway, a train, railway, that there was ISIS fighters that were attempting to bomb the trains. So they were able to stop that. So all this terror is being exported across the world. And anytime ISIS is seen as guilty of committing some type of terrorist attack, then the finger should be pointing back to D.C. and London and Paris and not the Middle East necessarily, because in the Middle East you have the Iraqi government, Hezbollah, Assad, the Iranians. Those are the enemies of ISIS. It's not the United States or certainly not Turkey or any of these other governments.
And it's important to keep in mind as well, I think, that this is something that a lot of people really aren't aware of in the West, specifically in the United States. And I think this will probably be at the forefront of what's discussed on the Sunday morning talk shows on the 15th of November concerning the Paris attacks. Something that's overlooked is the fact that Russia is in Syria as an ally. They're being welcomed into that country by the sovereign government to subdue the terrorist activity there. And the United States is not a welcome party, even though if you listen to the pronouncements of John Kerry, you would think that we do have a purpose there, that Assad is doing harm to his people.
Yeah, and it should be pointed out that, the Russians are in Syria. As you say, they were invited in. That's well within their rights under international law. The United States is in violation of international law because it is bombing a sovereign country without the permission of the sovereign country.
Right.
I've done a number of articles on that also, showing that the bombing campaigns by the United States in particular, they have not ever aimed at ISIS. Maybe one or two incidents where they aimed them at ISIS fighters when they got too close to a Western-owned oil field, or where there needed to be some type of, I call it death squad herding, basically moving these guys back from a certain area so they bomb on the outskirts of the territory where they're at. But by and large, there's never been any effort to bomb ISIS. It's been oil refineries owned by the Syrian government. It's in grain silos, food depositories, water stations, civilian neighborhoods. That's what the United States has been bombing, bridges, that sort of thing. And of course, a lot of intel that I'm getting is saying that these guys, the United States is actually either going out, sending their planes out, and coming back in bombs, never dropping them at all, or simply just dropping them out in the middle of the desert. Right? If they can't get civilian infrastructure, they just bomb the desert and let ISIS do what it wants. So you're clearly the friend of civilization here is Bashar al-Assad and the Russian government in Syria and Iraq. So the American people need to wise up to this fact, because this has been going on for quite some time. The United States has been, Al-Qaeda in the 70s, has been importing it and using it ever since. It hasn't stopped, and it's only getting worse. And I think the immigration, massive immigration into to Europe, that you're going to see this type of incident increase all over Europe. And this is, I would assume, the new normal. Remember, 9/11 was one of those attacks that just caught most people by total surprise, because a terrorist attack is a very strange thing. But now we've reached a point that it's the new normal, where there are terrorist attacks, lone wolves. I put that in scare quotes, lone wolves.
Right.
And, these terrorist attacks that occur all across Europe, and now it's the new normal, the pervasive fear, and again with the massive waves of immigration, I think that you're going to see more and more of this, and of course the then ready-made divide and conquer strategy will definitely be applied, as well as the justification for war.
Yeah, this immigration issue is something we've really not been able to touch upon this hour, but nevertheless, we're at the conclusion of the program, and I want to thank you very much, Brandon Turbeville, for being our guest.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be here.
Brandon Turbeville, author, journalist, media analyst. More information available at BrandonTurbeville.com. Excellent material. Please do check it out. This is James Tracy for Real Politic. Until next week, take care. Bye-bye.
Warning. Warning. The following message will destroy your paradigm. Proceed with caution. The apocalypse is upon us, brothers and sisters. The great revealing is now. The people have spoken and will no longer be manipulated by snake oil salesmen, masquerading as talk networks and alternative media. The new standard is set. This is the line in the sand. Stand with us to fulfill the mission to raise the consciousness of humanity. Stand against us and be exposed by the light we shine. We are TFR, your 100% listener-supported station, and the last bastion of unadulterated truth. Join the media shift by becoming a TFR supporter today, and send a clear message that the mission will not be jeopardized by corporate greed. Together, we will stand as protection from deception.
And now it's time for comments from our listeners.
Jennifer writes,
I'm confused about a commercial that is on your radio station. It has the thing on the NASA guy saying that he worked in a Jewish area and was fired. What is this about? Only a brain-dead moron would think that joke is funny. I'm going to contact all the Jewish organizations and sue you, your hosts, your members, and your listeners for $200,000.
Dear Jennifer, our Letters from Our Listeners segment is where we read the most bizarre and craziest emails from listeners. Humor subjective. We find these segments to be hilarious. Thank you for tuning in to TFR, and stay tuned for much more.
Portal.